Thanks very much. Climate change is indeed a very topical issue. I'm going to talk about three aspects. Number one, really quickly, everyone knows it. So I want to focus on the carbon budget and what that means for various countries as they move toward Paris. Climate science, there's one slide, that's the only one I'm going to show you. Lots of aspects of the climate system are changing. We know this really well, and we know why. It's the burning of fossil fuels is the main problem. What this means for us, of course, is that our climate in Australia and climates around the world are changing. Those are examples of extreme events that have all happened in the last couple of years around Australia, and for each one of those, we have pretty good evidence that climate change is making them worse, either increasing their frequency, in other words, they're happening more often, or making them more severe. Heat waves are hotter, bushfire danger is on the rise, rainfall is increasing. We all know this really well. There's no doubt about this science, so let me cut right to the chase. If you look at this globally and look at three time periods, 2001, 2009, 2014, you see that our estimate of five different areas of risk is increasing. In other words, as our knowledge improves, so does our understanding of how dangerous climate change actually is. The dotted line across here is important because that's the focus in Paris. That's the 2-degree policy target that 195 countries have signed up to. So the bottom line is, as science progresses, you see the color coding, it gets redder and redder. The more we learn, the riskier it looks. So that's the backdrop to Paris. The heat is on, so to speak, no pun intended, but this 2-degree target is looking increasingly out of reach unless we move really fast. So I want to summarize this using a carbon budget, and it's described really in this slide. Top panel are our emissions. You can see up till about 2010, 2015, those are observed. We have a choice. We can keep going the way we're going, that's the red line, or we can really start reducing emissions, that's the blue line. The bottom panel is what happens to temperature, given those two emission scenarios, there's the 2-degree policy target. So we gotta move fast if we're gonna get onto that blue line. The chance of getting onto that blue line is diminishing. This is the piece of science that stands behind all this, the carbon budget. If you look at the lines going out, the bottom left-hand part are actually observations. Colored lines are various emission scenarios. The remarkable thing is how closely temperature tracks to cumulative emissions, how much carbon we put in the atmosphere through history. That allows us to come up with a single number for a target for emission reduction for the globe, the so-called carbon budget. Now, there is a shading around that line, which tells us there is some variability in different models. So that gives us a probability distribution. What we can do then is compare this budget to stay within the 2-degree policy target with the economy. In other words, with the reserves of fossil fuels around the world. And there it is, really easy to see. Left hand in green is the budget. And that's the strict budget, about 75% probability of staying within 2 degrees, and the slack budget, toss of a coin. Look at the reserves of coal, oil, and gas. Much, much higher than the budget. That means we got to leave most of this stuff in the ground. And the penny only now is starting to drop in terms of energy policy meeting climate policy. This table shows what it actually looks like. There's the probabilities I was talking about of meeting this 2-degree policy target. You know, how much of a gambling person are you with your kids and grandkids? Do you just want to toss of a coin 50-50? Or do you want to make it a bit better, 3 chances out of 4? Well, depending on what you judge there, has a lot to say about how much CO2 we can emit. For the slack budget, we're a bit over 1,000 billion tons until we have to completely decarbonize. But for the more stringent budget, only 672. That's from 2012. To put this in perspective, we emit about 40 billion tons per year. The 670 budget, you can do the math in your head, that's less than 20 years, and we got to be out of carbon totally. So that tells you what the challenge really is, and the fact that even two or three years of being a laggard is really serious stuff. That's our infographic that we use for the Climate Council. Very clear, we need to leave 62, this is for the 50-50 budget, by the way, this is the most lenient one. We need to leave 62% of all fossil fuel reserves in the ground. But coal is the one we can use least. I won't go through the economic modeling that tells you that, but 88% of the world's coal reserves have to be left in the ground. The one we can use most is oil. The one we can use least is coal. What does this mean for Australia? If we took all of our coal resources, this is all the coal that we could possibly mine, as best we know it today in the country, we would consume 2/3 of the entire world's carbon budget to stay within 2 degrees. Australia is not an insignificant player. If you do any analysis, even using carbon capture and storage, over 90% of our reserves, these are the ones that are economically viable, so there's the difference, resources and reserves. 90% of them have to stay in the ground. This means that any new development is crazy. It makes no sense whatsoever. And it's not starting to stack up economically either. So Galilee Basin, all the hoo-ha in the media, if you're serious about climate policy, all that carbon's unburnable. Why pour billions of dollars into it if all it's going to do is contribute to blowing the climate out? So where does that leave us on the road to Paris as countries start thinking about this? This carbon budget only has come out in the last 5 years, and the science has been pieced together pretty quickly after the first paper came out in 2009. And it is changing how countries are thinking about what they actually need to do. There's still a lot of cloak and dagger work with baselines and percentage emissions and carbon intensities and per capita emissions, but ultimately people who are actually developing the underpinning for policy, like our climate change authority, are actually using the carbon budget approach as their baseline. Does Australia matter? Well, here are emissions. These are just aggregate emissions, not per capita, globally. China's the biggest one, but at least a quarter to maybe a third of that is actually for products that we consume in the West. But China gets tagged with the emissions because it's produced there. The United States is number two. Australia comes in at number 13 out of 195 countries. We're important. Look at this. We're more than the UK, more than Italy, more than France. So anyone who says Australia's not important, I think, is crazy. When you look at it per capita, look at this. Australia, 30.14, more than Canada, much more than US, much more than New Zealand, and there's China, 7.9. So per person, we've got a big responsibility. So as we go toward Paris, this is what things were looking like about a month ago before we put our targets in. You can see the United States 26 to 28% below 2005 by 2025. There's the smoke screen, guys. You have no idea what that means with regard to a carbon budget. Countries use different baselines. Look at the EU, 40% below 1990, not 2005, by 2030, not 2025. So unpicking this isn't easy. By the way, China is actually doing a lot more than many of the developed countries, given their situation. Between now and 2030, they pledged to reduce their carbon intensity. That's taking carbon out of their economy by up to 60%. That's never been done in history before, but they aim to do it. And they're going to peak their emissions by 2030. More interestingly, China has a history of underpromising and overachieving. So many commentators think they're going to peak their emissions by 2025 or even earlier. And that's really good news when the biggest country is going to be on the downward track in less than a decade is something that we couldn't even have hoped for 10 years ago. And they're doing it because they're rolling out renewables faster than in any other country on the planet. Here's some of the problems of targets and timetables. Here's the U.S. trying to unpick what's going on. From 1990, you see their emissions crawling up until about 2000, then wavering a bit, now starting to come down, partly because of developments in efficiencies in the economy, but mainly because Obama's getting serious about it. But look at their pledge for 2020, 17% below 2005. They choose 2005 because their emissions are high, and it makes their targets look deeper than they actually are. So 17% below 2005 by 2020, but 26 to 28 by 2025. The point I want to make is the slope of the curve is changing. The U.S. is ratcheting up its ambition, and that's good news. They're actually now becoming serious, and if they keep ratcheting up, they will get on the two-degree track. So Obama is indeed getting serious about what the U.S. should do. Look at Australia. Why did we pick 2005 as a baseline rather than 1990 or 2000? You can see there, because our emissions are high in 2005. So our target for 2020, unconditional, is 5%. That's the yellow line. That's the number of actual millions of tons we're going to reduce. On 2000, it's 5%. On 2005, it's 13%. So the baseline makes emission reductions look bigger or smaller. It's exactly the same amount of carbon we're going to reduce. And if we took 2010, it would be 8%. That's why you've got to unpick all this stuff really carefully. What did the Climate Authority recommend? Between 40 and 60% below 2000 levels. If you want to use 2005, 45 to 65%. That would get us on the 2-degree track. It's a credible target on what the science says and on what many other comparable countries are doing. We have benefits, avoids harmful consequences of dangerous climate change, and participate in the opportunities emerging from the low-carbon economy. Okay, last two slides. This now has been put out by the Climate Institute after our targets were announced. This compares us with other developed countries around the world. So when you try to put this all on the same basis. So if we look at the annual or the percentage emission reduction on 2005, putting everybody on 2005, you see our 26% up there. The United States is actually 41. So when our PM says we're doing the same amount, same ambitions, U.S., absolutely wrong. He's trying to use a sleight of hand. By the U.S. target is actually for 2025, ours is for 2030. Extrapolating U.S. to 2030 is 41% reduction. Look at the U.K., 48%, Switzerland, 50%. If you do it by per capita emissions, which the government likes to trot out, yes, we will reduce a lot because we're starting from a very high base, but we'll still be higher than any other developed country, even if we meet our targets. If you look at our annual rate of emission reductions, it's at the low end. In fact, by any measure, we're at the bottom or in the bottom three of any of the developed countries. So there are many ways you can compare this. The critical one is that blue box on the left. Those are the only countries whose emissions can possibly get us toward the 2-degree target. Everyone else is too high. So the good news is some big players like the USA and the EU are actually now getting serious about the 2-degree target. But we've got a ways to go. So COP21, the bottom line is this, three things to take home. The world is indeed moving more vigorously, and this is very good news. It's not enough yet. If you average all countries, we'd probably be heading for about 3 degrees or so. But some of the big players are moving toward that 2 degrees. There's no doubt we're lagging by any measure you want to make. We are at or near the bottom of developed countries, no matter how level of effort is measured. There's no way you can put a positive light on that. What do our low targets mean? Well, certainly they damage our reputation as a laggard or even a free rider when some developing countries are going to be doing more than Australia. We're missing out on jobs growth because the renewable industry is absolutely booming. There's far more investment globally in renewables now than there is in fossil fuels. We're losing out in this global transition to a renewables-driven economy. That's bad for our jobs, bad for our economy. And there is no convincing or proven approach that any of us scientists can see that we're actually going to meet our inadequate targets. So I'll leave it there.